Route 616, your home for all things Marvel main continuity. Hello, buddy. This is Ryan here with Bill as my co-host. As you see, the Chicken Man Dan is not here.
Oh, notably, neither is Spider-Man. I wonder if there's a connection.
Yeah, Dan can't be here if there's no Spider-Man. He pretends to hate him, but
oh, I was implying they were off together.
Yeah, we know they can't be separated.
Given that we've learned elements about Dan's personal life last week. Go back and watch that if you don't know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yes. If you haven't watched last week's episode, we consider it one of our finest. It was a pretty fun episode.
Was that last week or the week before that we were throwing shade at Dan? It was the week before because Fancy Dan was in the Spider-Man. Last week was Scorpion.
We did two issues last week. It was both Enforcers and Sandman and
okay,
Scorpion.
Maybe it was last week.
It was last
week.
We had last week was the like 7 minutes before we got talking about comics opening.
Yes, we did get sidetracked, but we also talked about Dan and Pete's sex life. So
yes, yeah, that
There's
was last week because the week before we didn't have Dan or
That's
no,
right.
we didn't record because we didn't have Dan. Then my plans changed or whatever. So, yeah. Yeah. We are here. This is episode 41, by the way. Pretty wild that we've had that many. Pretty fun week of comics this week, to be honest. They were all pretty solid. We're going to be covering the Fantastic Four Annual number 2 today. The A and C stories. We're going to do Avengers issues number 8 and 9. And then end off today with Fantastic Four number 31, which surprisingly isn't the worst comic in my opinion of the week. But we'll talk about that
as we go along.
I think
it's the worst of the week, but that
I knew
being
you
said,
would.
I still liked it.
We'll talk about that more as the episode goes along. So to start us off, we might as well jump. This episode might be pretty short since we use the Marvel database now, and it's only 5 stories, but that's okay. It is what it is.
I think it'll be decently long because this one gives us lots of stuff to talk about outside of the comics.
Yeah, the annual.
These are all except actually even the throwaway
even
final
the Fantastic Four is kind
story
of important.
Are important stories for the greater Marvel continuity.
The length of the annual, hypothetically, and the important notes and important debuts and stuff happening in this issue will in this episode will probably help carry us to about our normal life, or what's become our normal life now that we've shortened them down.
Plus, these are all substantial stories.
Yes. So to start us off with the A story of Fantastic Four Annual number 2, we're going to read a story called The Origin of Doctor Doom, which I found out I had actually read before, but in a reprinted form.
That's why it was sounding familiar to you.
I realized as I was reading it that I definitely read it before. It must have been reprinted in recent years in a comic.
Yeah, I'm sure
reading.
This one's been reprinted to death. I just figured you were making a crack about to start looking like the random Strange Tales or something story we got about the gypsy healer.
No, that wasn't even a joke about that, but I was going to make a joke about that, but I left that alone. But I was it felt like the actual story felt really similar when I was reading it. But this
Well, they've
is, of
never
course
updated it. I mean, they've reprinted it, but it's always been the same stuff, so I'm sure it's still getting reprints in the original
form. I think
form.
It might have been reprinted in, I want to say that I've read it in, I think it got reprinted in, a milestone of Iron Man or something, when it was, Iron Man, when it was Doom and Riri. Two different Iron.
I was just gonna say, I bet they reprinted it for when Doom was Iron Man.
I think that's when they might have done it. But anyways, Stan Lee, of course, here to write and make our lives more interesting. art by Jack Kirby, inks by Chick Stone, Jack Kirby and Sol Brodsky on the cover, Stan Goldberg on colors, Sam Rosen on letters. This is a July 1964 release date. This is a 12-page story, and I will let Bill take us away with this one.
All right, and as usual, we're stealing this from the Marvel Wiki because we've learned they're better at this than we are.
We won't have to stammer through.
Yeah. Dr. Doom is met by his minion, Boris, on the eve of his mother's death. Okay, so they've kind of screwed that up. It's the anniversary of his mother's death, not the eve. She's already been dead for a while.
Relatable.
Doom ventures out to the field where his life began and reflects back. As a young boy, Victor Von Doom's father, a gypsy healer, is asked by the king's men to heal the king's wife. Werner Von Doom tries his best but fails, and when the king's wife dies of her illness, he sends his troops out to get revenge on Werner. Werner and his son Victor flee into the mountains, where the father wraps the boy in his own coat while they hide in the snow and ice. They are found by the rest of their clan and taken back to the village. Before he dies from exposure, Werner asks Boris to look after his son. Boris interprets this to mean to watch out for the boy, not to look after him. Furious at the death of both his father and mother at the hands of the king, Victor digs up his mother's old chest filled with mystical potions and books. Doom soon becomes a master of science and sorcery, using boat skills to protect his people and swindle the wealthy. He avoids execution by allowing the king's guard to capture robot duplicates of himself. Eventually, Victor's technical knowledge how to attract... Reading. You can do this. Eventually, Victor's technological know-how attracts the administrators at State University, who offer him a full scholarship in America. Victor agrees, and while attending State University, he almost ends up sharing a room with Reed Richards. However, Doom's arrogance and demands for private quarters prompts Richards to leave. The snubbing leads Richards to rooming with Ben Grimm. Victor becomes determined to contact the Netherworld, and one day, Reed enters Victor's room unannounced and looks over Victor's notes for the device that would allow Victor to achieve his goals. Victor catches him and instantly becomes angry, kicking Reed out and ignoring the warnings that some of his calculations are off. When his device is complete, Victor has his assistant activate it, but the miscalculations cause the device to explode in his face. Scarred, Victor bandages his face and is ejected from school in disgust for his unauthorized experiment. Victor travels the mountains of Tibet, where he finds an order of monks who teach him about magic. Later, Doom has them fashion him a suit of armor. Impatiently, Doom places the iron mask on his face before it has time to cool. Doom then leaves the monks and eventually takes over his homeland, where he becomes the arch-nemesis to the Fantastic Four. With his recollections over, Dr. Doom returns to his castle, leaving Boris to wonder when Doom will menace the human race once again.
Ta-da! Really good story.
Yes.
To be basic about it.
This is an excellent story. I gave it 4 stars.
I did too. We're on the same page on this one. Very, very fun.
And I've seen a fan theory bandied about this one. Kind of damages because of him putting the hot mask on, but I think they kind of forget about that in the future.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of forgotten about.
Like, yeah, and I always loved the concept that he actually just got like a slight little scratch on his face, and he's so arrogant that to him his face was completely ruined that he had like one tiny little scar.
I was wondering if you liked that concept. I know we talked about it before, but I couldn't remember. I like that too. I like that theory that he just doesn't, that he's not really scarred like he thinks he is.
It's very fitting with the character.
It is. I think, at least. I didn't love the hot mask part, like you said.
Well,
but like
it's pointless, because even in that comic, they gave no indication that he actually did any damage to himself by putting on the hot mask.
Yeah.
So it's almost like they couldn't go there because of the comics code.
True.
Like, you can't have a guy melting his own face. But, so I don't know why they even bothered with that scene. I guess just to show that he was impatient.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, anyways, the origin Doom, really good origin. We've talked about how this was obviously reprinted since I've read it before. Excuse me. But just a really solid story. So we'll move on to the C story here. We will mention real fast, in between why there it goes to A to C is because in between there was some character filling out lines of villains that had debuted since the last annual, where they ended off at like issue 17 or something, and they had pages for all the new villains that have been introduced since.
That's actually not what's counted as the B story. They reprinted Prisoners of Dr. Doom.
Oh, I guess it's just not on Marvel Unlimited.
Marvel didn't feel the need to upload the scans of it, but...
Okay, well, I'm talking to my ass then.
But, yeah, that's the actual B story is
okay.
The reprint of Fantastic Four 5.
Well, then I guess that's just bonus content in the issue, then, is the stuff I'm talking about. But in between this A story and C story, there's this bonus content. But the fill-ins, of course, the MVP being Infant Terrible. There was a pin-up page for all the Fantastic Four, too, which was pretty cool.
I did like that they used to do those splash pages of all the villains. Like, that's the sort of thing you'd buy an annual for.
Yeah, it's a nice collection.
It's gotten to the
touch.
Point that annuals are kind of a disappointment because you're just spending more money for a mediocre comic book usually.
It's just an extra chapter in the ongoing whatever arc's going on.
Yeah, and then a bunch of stuff written by people that don't really work on the title and tends to be off character and not very entertaining.
Yeah, it's that or it's a combination. It's like they'll literally start like a story arc or event with it or end one with it. It can be
anytime they don't put a standalone story in an annual nowadays, it annoys me because I end up having to spend like $12 on one comic book for a normal length story because I don't want all the reprints and like sometimes the other people trying their hand at writing the character can be entertaining, but I'm not going to pay for it usually.
Most of the time, the extra people, their stories tend to not be as good as the main.
They're usually bad,
and a lot of times,
especially in Deadpool, they were always bad.
Well, that Jerry Duggan Deadpool was incredible, though. But also, every so often, you might get one where it's like, "Why? I wish you were writing this title, and now I'm upset because of that." That does happen occasionally.
That's giving me flashbacks to the one issue of Howard the Duck I bought. Because it was a two-part crossover with Squirrel Girl.
That would have been when Chip Zdarsky was writing.
Yeah, Chip was writing
Howard,
and then they had the original Squirrel Girl team on Squirrel Girl, and they wrote each other's comics. And the Squirrel Girl team writing Howard was hilarious. Chip was good at writing Squirrel Girl, but the Squirrel Girl team writing Howard was hilarious.
Fair enough. Well, I guess we'll move on to our C story now of the annual, which is called The Final Victory of Dr. Doom. We have, of course, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby here still, Chick Stone still. Everything is the same. They use the same team throughout the whole thing. That's cool. 25-page story. And Bill will also take this one.
All right. This will be... Despite the difference in page length, this is actually the shorter recap. I think they cut a lot of stuff out. While the FF deal with some troubles with the Fantastic Car, Dr. Doom is rescued from deep space by the time-traveling Ramatut. Conversing, they somehow illogically theorize that Ramatut is perhaps the future version of Dr. Doom. Inspired all the same, Ramatut returns Doom to Earth while the ersatz pharaoh resumes his wanderings. Back on Earth, Doom reaches the Latverian embassy and begins formulating a trap. With the Fantastic Four unaware that Doom is really the ruler of Latveria, he invites them to a party, putting a drug in their drinks to make them see illusions. He tricks each of them into thinking they're being attacked by the others before they eventually realize his machinations. Okay, that's not entirely true. He tricks Susan into thinking she's seeing Reed cheating on her. And then when they figure out what's going on, Reed blows it off as to be expected because she's just a fragile woman. No, I'm not exaggerating for comedic effect. This is one of the most 60s moments of 60s comic reading.
Yeah. This was not great, but...
It was really hard to not punish the story for that.
Yeah, it was. But thankfully, there was more stuff to punish the story for.
I feel like I like this story more than you.
You did. I can almost guarantee.
Regrouping, the team battles at their headquarters. Reed offers Doom a chance to destroy him, providing Victor can use a mentally powered weapon against Richards before Reed can do likewise. As the contest begins, Reed offers Doom one last drink. Engaging the device, Doom believes he destroys Richards and departs the Baxter building triumphantly. However, Reed has given Doom a taste of his own medicine by drugging him with his own hallucinogen.
That pretty much covers it.
Definitely skimped a bit on the finish.
Yeah.
Because Doom knows the rest of the Fantastic Four is alive and right there and just doesn't give a shit, because for him it was all about just proving he was better than Reed.
Yeah.
Because he's still bitter about Reed pointing out the mistakes with his calculations in college.
The superior Doom.
Yeah. Which is most of why I really like this, because I really like that they did some work on characterizing one of the villains.
That's the best aspect of the story for sure.
This is just a normal Fantastic Four story, but the fact that they gave Doom like actual motivation for me bumped it up a star, and the fact that he's not just I wanted to steal lots of money and take over the world.
I'm gonna guess you gave this a 4.
I did.
I gave it a 3.
Yeah, if it wasn't for characterizing Doom. And, like, the fact that he's just willing to leave the rest completely alone because he thinks he beat Reed, it would have been a 3. The rest of the story is just a Fantastic Four story.
I thought a lot of the story was really dumb.
That's just a Fantastic Four story at this point. They haven't gotten good yet.
Yeah, but I really didn't like the drink stuff, but it does kind of pay off with the Doom stuff at the end. But it's like, a lot of it's really painful, but... it was still fun. The character interactions are really strong in Fantastic Four, so that...
Yeah, taking Thing to a fancy dinner also counts for a lot.
Yeah.
Because anytime Thing tries to fit into a normal society, it's usually hilarious.
It is.
I don't know why they randomly decided that when Ben got turned into Rock, he suddenly lost all social graces or knowledge of how to interact with other people. But the fact that he's completely socially inept is one of the best things about Fantastic Four.
I don't know. Part of me would like to believe he's kind of always been like that and it's just accentuated now.
That's very possible, but I mean, he was a star quarterback that lots of people liked, so I don't think he was, like, completely incapable of functioning in a restaurant.
Yeah, but there's also kind of some runs later on that kind of show him as a human. He's a star jock, and he's almost still, like, an outcast. And especially, there's also some of the runs where it showed that he was in an abusive household, which is, like, the Ultimates fan, but some kind of transferred over to it. So it's like,
yeah, there was Ultimate bleed, especially post Secret Wars.
Yeah, there's a bit of a there's so it kind of works, but yeah.
I've always preferred Goofy Ben to Dark Ben anyway.
Yeah, Goofy Ben's definitely better. It's shocking looking at earlier comics that the Thing is not like a bigger solo name for Marvel. I mean, he's obviously had his runs and stuff, and they did the Marvel 2 and run to try and push him, but which
here's
probably why
problem.
He isn't big.
Here's the thing about Thing. He's a great supporting character. He sucks when he drives the story. Like, even though they're both pretty much nothing but shitty throwaway stories, Marvel team up with Spider-Man and sometimes Torch is almost always entertaining. And Marvel 2-in-1 is almost always terrible. Because Ben has to be the main driver of the action, and everything about his characterization up to that point doesn't make him good at that.
It's also less dynamic than a Spider-Man driving the story. Because there's much more you can do with Spider-Man than Thing.
Can really just have Thing be cranky and strong.
Yeah. Which is sometimes where they go around with Hulk some too, but the Hulk, they kind of ended up figuring it out a bit more.
I think they figured it out. Yeah, actually, Hulk, they nailed it really early on. Because the Hulk solo stories are... It's been one of the most consistently entertaining books since it got relaunched to where I am.
That's probably where they about were figuring it out, really.
Yeah, there's like one bad story arc at the beginning. And honestly, that's not a bad story arc. I just hate a lot of like what he's fighting.
Yeah.
Well, and then I'm trying to avoid spoilers since Ryan hasn't read it yet.
Yeah.
But then once they get past that story arc and really dive into the stuff with the leader, it's pretty much consistently entertaining up until past where he fights Wolverine.
Well, the first six issues were pretty much like a trial run for the character.
Oh, those first six issues were terrible.
That was, yeah.
The actual Hulk run is pretty consistently entertaining.
That's good. But we'll stop talking about Hulk till he comes back, and then...
So another 6 months or so.
Because, yeah, pretty much.
God, it's a long run until the... Well, that first Hulk run, the first story arc is something like 14 comics long.
Gonna be a few episodes in a row, that.
Yeah. It's more variable than you'd think from the long clump. Like, it doesn't run into the problem of a lot of the Thor arcs where it's just the same thing over and over again.
Actually, since it's half of a Tales, it might just end up being like two episodes. Cause
it probably will be like two episodes. But it flows along pretty quickly because it's less... It is one ongoing arc that they come back to, but like Hulk goes and does different things. It's just everyone picks up right after the end of the previous issue.
Yeah.
And then they circle back and tie off the leader like eight episodes after the last, or eight issues after the last time it was dealt with.
Fair enough. Well, I guess we should move on to Avengers, which is issue number 8 we're going to start with, titled simply Kang the Conqueror. That's right. We're meeting Kang this issue, or, well, meeting him. We're kind of meeting him. We've kind of already met him, but we'll get into that. Stan Lee is writing this, of course. Jack Kirby and... Yeah, Kirby did do this issue. It's the next issue that was different. Dick Guyer is on inks. Jack Kirby and Vincent Coletta on the cover art, which is probably why this is a half-decent cover. Sam Rosen on letters. And this is a July 1964 release, a 21-page story. And I will run us through this one real quick because the synopsis is fucking short. We might have to insert some here. I didn't realize how short the synopsis was. I looked at the notes and thought the notes was the synopsis for a minute.
Well, nothing fucking happens in this issue, let's be honest.
That's fair. Kang the Conqueror comes to rule Earth. Imagine if I just stopped talking there. No.
Some of those recaps I had a while back were like that.
The Avengers attack and are beaten and captured. Apart from the Wasp, she and Rick Jones form a plan and get... Yep, Rick Jones and the Teen Brigade. I forgot their fucking name. How could I? And Rick Jones, Rick Jones Teen Brigade here. So Rick Jones and Wasp form a plan to get on the Kane ship and free the Avengers. I gotta say what their plan was, because it's not said here, and it's a really good plan. You see,
please,
what had happened?
Elaborate.
You see what had happened was, the teens came up with a little plan where they were going to be like, hey, Kang, we want to join you. And so they said that. Kang let them on the ship, and they just simply distracted Kang with one of his fins they wanted him to bring from a ship and had it drop to distract Kang so they could then go free the Defenders, who, by the way, the Defenders were stuck in these rays that were a paralysis ray, so they couldn't move inside of Kang's ship. So, yeah.
So Earth's Mightiest Hero had to be rescued by teenagers whose yep. best plan was, hey, Kang, look over there.
Yep.
I hate them so much.
This was quite an issue. The Avengers battle Kang again and manage to defeat him by destroying his suit, which controls all his weapons. Kang is forced to flee back into his time. That's literally the synopsis. And I added on to that.
That's fairly inclusive of what happens in this comic.
And I added on.
Although they did leave out one prime bit of 60s bullshit that we're not skipping on.
Hit us with a bill.
Did you guys like when Rama Tut and Doom turned out to be the same person? Wouldn't it be cool if they were someone else, too? Through equally tenuous 60s logic? Because guess what? After Rama Tut tried to go to his own time, he fucked it up and became Kang. But he will still show up as Rama Tut again in the future.
Yep, this is the start of the different generations to Kang. Rama Tut is Kang, blah, blah, blah. But Kang is the one that is the most well-known version of the character.
That's only because I think they retconned out him being Doom in the future.
Yeah.
Because I would argue Doom is a more known version than Kang, although possibly not after the current phase of the MCU.
Yeah, I think they retcon it so they're related, but they're not the same person.
Yeah.
So Doom's like a far relative or something to Kang, I think.
I think that's how it ends up, although I haven't read a ton of Fantastic Four outside of the reading order, and at the point I am, they're still all the same people. Because they've mostly forgotten to address that ever, and Rama Tut has basically been forgotten.
Well, I thought they were kind of like, what if we're the same person, but the way they do it, like, heavily implies that they want us to kind of think that they are. So they don't really clear that up.
They just are.
Perfect.
For the next 15 years, they just are.
That's great.
Anytime they mention Rama Tut again, he will be just Doom. Because they're completely unfounded and logically incoherent conclusion that they were the same person.
Nice.
Just becomes canon going forward.
I hate that.
Oh, don't worry. Pretty soon X-Men will be along with something you will hate even more.
Oh, I can't wait.
Lucifer. The thing they have never retconned, despite a future issue clearly drawing a better explanation.
That should be fun. So, Avengers number 8, to give a ranking, it got a very friendly three.
I felt fairly comfortable giving it a 3.
I didn't. I would have rated this more like a 2.5. I didn't really like this, but I had to push it up, man. It got pushed up because of Kane and the historical.
The plot was nonsensical and fairly dull, but it was like 60% a pretty entertaining fight. So I felt pretty comfortable giving it a 3 just because I flew through it pretty quickly.
I didn't fly through it quickly. So I felt this one more than you did, apparently. and I liked the Teen Brigade more than you. It got better when the Teen Brigade came in for me.
Well, this was the issue where I started to hate the Teen Brigade and Rick Jones. Before, Rick was just fine. He's an audience insert that they can explain shit to. Doesn't really bother me. Occasionally, he's a little whiny and annoying, but doesn't really bother me. This issue is where my undying hatred of Rick Jones and the Teen Brigade began.
Rick Jones is Bill's Spider-Man.
And you haven't even read Captain Marvel yet.
No. I might turn on him with
you. Holy shit, you will hate Rick Jones when he is, like, paired with Captain Marvel and they're doing the whole Billy Batson thing blatantly. But in space...
But in space, even better.
I've never been so happy to see someone sent to the negative zone.
I thought you were going to say you've never been so happy to see a title end. But
I haven't hit the end of Captain Marvel yet.
Oh, that's fair enough. That's probably why.
But they did a thing where now when Captain Rick turns into Captain Marvel, he gets sent to, like, the negative zone. And they leave him there for months. And it's glorious. Because fuck Rick.
That's great.
But I mean, anyways, to be clear, Captain Marvel was awful before Rick was in it. Rick just didn't improve it.
Oh, Marvel Database, can you not start playing random sounds in my ears, please? I'm begging. There
this
we go.
Is why I have an ad blocker.
Yeah, that's probably a great fin to have sometimes. But let's move on to Avengers number 9, which is titled The Coming of the... Can I read Finn's right? The Coming of the Wonder Man. I still didn't read it right, but fuck it.
I think you were on course to read it right the first time, because it's got Stan's wacky punctuation.
I was, but then like I didn't like how I read the word "the" and I hated it. So, but yeah. Anyway, The Coming of the Wonder Man. Stan Lee is the writer, of course, and this one has a bit of a switcheroo as we get the good golly, we get some good action here with the art because Don Heck is on board,
and does Dick Ayers,
and Dick Ayers on inks. It's Don Heck and Dick Ayers together. This is a hell of a good book for art.
I think that's the main reason I liked this one so much.
That it really did help a lot. I'm very happy Jack had to sit this one out for some reason.
I was going back and rereading pages just to look at the art. Like, I knew what was going on with the story, but I just wanted to look at the art again.
That's part of why I took a decent... That's why I was going through this pretty fast, and then I legitimately slowed myself down to take in the art for a little bit.
And that is super rare for me in the 60s. Because, let's be honest, 60s and 70s comic art is not good.
No. Steve Ditko has his moments, of course, but... And
I can't think of a single panel of Steve Ditko's that I've ever really wanted to, like, just look at because it's not doing something cool. Like, he'll do some good dynamic scenes that look good for the time, but, like, this one, even just ordinary scenes of them, like, sitting around talking at a conference table, you just want to look at because it was so well drawn.
There was an issue or two where he had... I think there was, like, a really great panel that he had in the Living Brain issue of Spider-Man that I highly enjoyed.
Okay, I'll admit, in that issue, I was not exactly receptive.
That's fair.
Because that issue was awful.
I think there was also some decent work in that Sandman issue, too, his first appearance.
Yeah.
Which has been his best appearance.
I definitely liked the creativity of a lot of the panels in that one.
And I think he had some great work in the first annual there, too, a little bit ago.
Yeah. He did those splash pages that were really cool.
Yeah, exactly.
But those were more cool than just, like, gorgeous art for me. Like,
fair.
I liked what they were doing with it, but it doesn't hold up.
It doesn't. It doesn't, to be fair. But anyways, on the cover here is work by Jack Kirby and Chick Stone. Already some excellent letters, and this is an August 1964 release date. 21-page story, and I will also take this one, which is a little longer, a whole paragraph longer than the last synopsis.
This one we might have to pad then, because stuff actually happens in this one.
It's a paragraph longer, but also the paragraphs are longer too. So
all
we'll
right,
see.
We'll see.
They're decent life, but we might still have to pad it out. Baron Zemo, the Executioner and Enchantress, scheme on how to I had to reread that for a second in my head. Scheme on how to defeat the Avengers. They notice in the news that Simon Williams, arrested for embezzling money, blames Tony Stark. He was in competition with Tony, and Tony was putting him out of business with all his inventions. So Simon Williams started to steal all the
stuff. Just like usual, resort to theft when you can't compete in the marketplace of ideas.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, this is just capitalism.
Yeah, Elon Musk, is that you? But anyways, they agree to help him get revenge on Stark, as Iron Man is his bodyguard. There's a brackets note here that they are unaware they are one and the same. In case you guys haven't been paying attention, then nobody knows Iron Man and Tony are the same. Because this is the 60s, and Robert Downey Jr. hasn't ruled the world of Iron Man. They take Williams to the Amazon jungle and use a machine on him, which makes him all-powerful. But to keep him under control, Simo poisons him, and only he knows the antidote. And by the way, with that situation of Simo having poisoned him and controlling the antidote, he has a week before he needs the he needs an antidote every week to keep him from dying. A little detail. They stage a battle. Wait a minute. Okay, yeah. I thought they skipped something important here, but they stage a battle.
That's really all what happened at the Amazon.
Yeah, they stage a battle against the Avengers, where Wonder Man aids the Avengers to earn their trust. He explains the illness he has and the Enchantress puts the idea of an illness into Captain America's mind, and then
America doesn't believe him for one second when he tries to
join. No, because Captain America almost figures it out. So then they all think that Simon Williams has an illness, so the Avengers work to find a cure. The Wasp is taken captive, and the Avengers go to save her, only to be betrayed by Wonder Man. Because, yes, Wonder Man's been a double agent. Wonder Man took Wasp to use his
clear, because Wonder Man kidnapped Wasp and went back to the Amazon by himself so that they'd follow him.
The Masters of Evil come very close to defeating the Avengers until Wonder Man turns on Simo. His change of heart is due to the Avengers doing all they could to save him, even though they didn't know him. Wonder Man saves the Avengers, but subsequently dies from Simo's poison. Ta-da.
Conveniently, this story took exactly 1 week.
That's pretty cool.
This one was really good.
It was.
The summary does not do it justice.
It really doesn't. Even Dan might get a little bit of a kick out of this comic.
Yeah. This was the best double agent joins the team I've read. Because there are other versions like Mimic in X-Men.
Yeah, that's true.
But this is like the one that didn't annoy me.
I really like this too. Gave this 4 stars, which surprised me. I did not think that was going to happen going in.
Yeah, I gave this 4 stars, and I came in actively not wanting to like it.
Wonder Man isn't really a character that's gets a lot of love.
I'll be honest, I've read one comic with Wonder Man in it.
I've read more than that.
Actually, I might have read a couple others that I just don't remember. I don't remember if they've brought him back or not by the point
I don't know if they have by the point you're at, but it's a... Wonder Man's a pretty forgettable character.
He's just generic superhero.
He's very generic.
He has no unique powers.
By forgettable, I mean he's forgettable in the normal sense, but he's also forgettable because the creators forget to make him interesting.
What do you do with him, though? I mean, even if you want to explore the former Connor's made good element, you've got Clint Barton to do it.
They pretty much do all they need to do of him here. I don't really know why they bring him back as many times as they do, but...
I'm going to go out on a limb.
He's one of those characters that they bring him back, then he gets killed off, and they bring him back, and he gets killed off. And
it's because certain creators love referencing old comics.
Fair.
I mean, I was just looking through the database today, and I saw that the Hijacker from like the second or third Ant-Man story just got brought back. Like the epitome throwaway, utterly meaningless character. No, I don't think it was the Hijacker, actually. I think it was someone even more obscure than that. But it wasn't the Scarlet Beetle, which would have been great.
Yeah, that would have been incredible, of course.
But yeah, if I didn't say, I also gave this one 3 stars.
I gave it 4.
Or 4, sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say also.
Sorry, I was trying to figure out who that character was.
Yeah, me too. That's what I was thinking of. Because I was...
No,
I
it's the protector.
Oh. Oh, nice. Nice.
They brought the protector back in, like, December of 2022. And I know that was just someone looking for nerd cred because they read all the old Ant-Mans and wanted to show off. That's because, like, that's not at all a thing I would do when I'm writing comics.
Yeah, no, totally. I would never write a Scarlet Libido story if somebody gave me a chance at Ant-Man.
Scarlet Beetle, I'm bringing back Miss America.
You know,
not the new Miss America. The original.
Miss America comics written by Bill.
Or going dark, or going deep on the Spider-Verse and bringing back Spider-Queen. The first arachnid-themed character that actually had webbing. I read this shit, you have to laugh at it.
Oh, shit.
I mean, I didn't say I was bringing back the original Black Widow.
Fine, I'll bring back Quasar.
Don't do that. Quasar sucks. I'm bringing back comics I actually liked.
I had to go with the Feist one.
Although it might say more about me that I actually liked the original Black Widow.
Fair.
She had 4 comics and 4 costumes.
4 costumes?
Because they'd write one comic and then forget she existed for like a year. And then they're like, oh yeah, we have that, like, dead woman that gets bounties for the devil. We should use her again. And then they'll do another comic with her with, like, a completely different creative team and completely different design.
That's hilarious.
Different relationship with the devil because they've forgotten everything about it and just remembered they own the character and want to use her again.
Oh, I love it.
She's the epitome of we need to fill 5 pages in this book, just find us something. But somehow she's still entertaining.
Nice. Well, I guess let's move on to our supposed main offense of the episode and go into Fantastic Four, number 30. By the way, I will mention now before I forget, I referenced at the start of the episode that this Fantastic Four we're about to cover wasn't my least favorite. That's because Avengers 8 was. Avengers 8 was my least favorite fan to read this week, but... This was Bill, so we'll get into this one.
Yeah, and I like this one still more than Ryan liked Avengers 8.
Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, of course, here again together. Inks by Chick Stone again, because he's Jack's right-hand man these days. Also together on the cover, No Soul Brodsky here. Sam Rosen on letters, August 1964 release, a 21-page story, and Bill, take us away.
All right. The Baxter Building is rocked by an earthquake, sending the Fantastic Four to cover. After the confusion, Sue finds a newspaper and is upset to see a story about an escaped convict. When Reed tries to press her for answers, she refuses to explain, which troubles Reed. Later, the Fantastic Four, sans Sue, are called out to investigate the disappearance of a city block that vanished into the ground during the earthquake. Little do they know that the block was lowered into the earth by their old foe, the Mole Man. Tracking the Invisible Girl, the Mole Man locates her on his scanning devices and begins to sink the city block she is on. Meanwhile, the male members of the team return home to find a note left behind by Sue when suddenly they are hit by another earthquake. After the quake, Reed learns that Sue went down to police headquarters. After hearing a radio report that a block on 23rd Street disappeared as well, they realize that is where police headquarters is located. At that moment, below the earth, the Mole Man locates Sue Storm amongst the people he has abducted and has his moloids subdue her. They actually do a cool thing here where her invisibility doesn't work on them because they're subterranean and barely use their eyes.
I was shocked that that was a thing that happened in this.
And it made sense. Usually
yeah,
Stan's attempts at science don't.
I was shocked. I meant to bring that up when I was reading it, and I forgot.
With the Invisible Girl as his prisoner, the Mole Man plans to keep his foes away. Having deduced the Mole Man's involvement, the other Fantastic Four members fly to 23rd Street in the Pogo Plane. They find the... Okay, so the comic has gotten... Or the recap has gotten this out of order. So I'm going to have to summarize this myself. They go down and they confront the Mole Man, who reveals that he has Sue held hostage and tells them that if they do anything to interfere with his plans, he's going to kill Sue. And then he sends them back to the surface with some sort of device of his. When they arrive on the surface, they find Avengers about to defend the pit and attack the Mole Man. And the Fantastic Four are worried that that will get Sue killed. So they try to talk to the Avengers, and of course, the Avengers aren't listening, and there's a bit of a scuffle. But eventually, everyone calms down, and they convince the Avengers to give them some time to deal with it themselves. And then they go back down to the Mole Man's lair, and because Reed goes and builds a device that he can use to track Sue. And they use the torch to burn a hole directly through the earth to Sue's holding cell. And so they bust into that, free Sue, and then they're going to go fight the Mole Man, but Reed convinced them to leave, and they go to leave, but they're too late because the Mole Man had set his lair to self-destruct, and it explodes, and Sue's hit by a piece of shrapnel. So they take her to the surface as quickly as possible and take her to the hospital, where they realize that... only one surgeon could possibly save her life, but he just escaped from prison. And just then, the guy they saw in the paper shows up, and it turns out that it's Franklin Storm, Sue and Johnny's father. And when he heard what had happened to Sue, he came to perform the surgery, even though it was going to get him caught. And so he saves Sue's life and then is arrested, and that's the end of the story.
The dad stuff was a little goofy, but I was fine with it.
It's setting something up.
I didn't realize he was a prisoner at this point, introduction-wise. I know Franklin Storm as the scientist, so...
Yeah, there's going to be a retcon somewhere then that leads to that, because I believe he dies in his next appearance.
Oh.
And then he's dead, for as far as I've read.
Yeah, I think there's a big retcon on that, and then at some point, I think, unless I'm just getting the Ultimate timeline in my head or something.
They do sometimes bleed together.
Yeah.
But yeah, this was a good story. It was a lot more readable than I expected a Mole Man story to be.
Yeah, I was pretty much thinking the same thing. I was shocked. This was... The average of the site is literally like right on the 3-star point. This is like a perfect 3-star
book. Yeah, I was just going to say, this is exactly a 3-star for me.
It's decent. It's pretty... It was better than I thought it was going to be, so I was pretty happy about that.
I was entertained for the entire time.
Yeah. I would, and the stuff that I was like a little meh with was some of the Mole Man stuff, but Mole Man himself like is fine, but some of the antics are meh.
Mole Man's really just there to get punched.
Yeah.
Like, he drives the story in the sense they kidnap Sue, but he's not in like 70% of the story, and I think that makes him work.
Yeah.
Because them just going underground and fighting Mole Man, that's not very interesting. But them having to not fight the villain because Sue would be killed instantly.
It's almost less is more when it comes to the Mole Man.
Yeah. He works as, like, motivation for them to do something else. If it's just, we're going to go fight Mole Man, that's not interesting.
Yeah.
Although, the really bad stuff about Mole Man hasn't happened yet. Because they've only done one Tyrannus story and one Kallus story. The problem becomes all three of those characters are exactly the fucking same. Because they're all just underground civilization. does evil stuff. And so you have three villains just doing recycled storylines.
Love
it. And I think that makes Mole Man worse than any individual story of his.
Probably does, yeah.
Because he is the best of the underground characters.
He is, which is saying something.
They should have left it just at him. And maybe Tyrannus, just because they did some, they do some cool stuff with the two civilizations fighting each other sometimes.
Fair. Be interesting to see if how true that
is. I think there's like a Hulk story where Tyrannus kidnaps Hulk and sends him after the Mole Man. Because they're fighting over the Fountain of Youth.
Well, I think on that note, that was a pretty fun week of comics. All three are above for the star ratings, so that's that doesn't happen a lot.
I'm sorry, but what's going to happen next?
I
looked ahead.
Yeah, next week should be an interesting episode. We do get to start off with what you would think would be a Shining Ray of Light with two Sergeant Furies, but...
trust me, that's going to be the Shining Ray of Light.
It probably will be.
That week's comics.
So, we're going to start off with two Sergeant Furies, which is Sergeant Fury and the Silent Commandos, issue number 11 and issue number 12. I've only read 12 so far. I mean, I only read 12. I hope I've read 11 first. I've only read 11 so far. I haven't read 12 yet. And I haven't read the rest of the week's comics yet, but 11, I will say... I actually didn't like my least favorite Sergeant Fury issue, so I'm interested to see what Bill thinks when we talk about this next week. But in issue 11, they break in their temporary CO, so...
Oh, it's that one! I've heard of that one. I think I'm going to like that one.
This might be one of the rare flips where... Well, this... I guess it's not rare. It's rare for this title, though. It's going to be a rare flip for this title where you actually could like it more than me. Which should be interesting to talk about. Sergeant Fury and his Howling Commandos, issue number 12, of course. Apparently, this is when a Howler turns traitor. So, I don't know what goes on in this one, but it sounds interesting.
Just from the title, I'm going to throw out right now, on record, what I think it'll be.
Okay, I had an idea in my
head. One of them has a secret mission that they have to undergo that involves some sort of heroic thing that no one, including the other Howlers, can know about. And they're going to go do it. And everyone's going to think they defected to the Nazis and be really, really sad. And then they're going to save everyone's life because of their secret mission. And everyone will rejoice and they'll all be friends again.
Yeah, probably. We'll see. If you got that right, I'll give you a cookie or something. then after that is obviously what's going to be the highlight of the week as we go back to Tales to Astonish with issue number 61, the A story, since it's a Giant Man story. By the way, this is the issue that has made Bill be like, oh, there's worse to come. So stay tuned. Apparently this is titled Now Walks the Android. Do I want to know about the Android?
No, you really don't. This was clearly written over our weekend. Actually, I say that as a joke. I vaguely remember seeing something that they actually were like right up against the deadline with this one.
Can't wait.
That doesn't forgive it.
Then we are going to go back into Journey in the Mystery, finally. I say finally, it hasn't been that long, but issue 110, the A story here, which sees the return of the team, of the duo of the Cobra and Mr. Hyde.
And Loki.
Ah, nice. A triple threat. Then we have issue number 111 of Journey in the Mystery, the A story as well, which... has the trio still in the story, and apparently Thor is very powerful.
Yeah, it's just
the
second half. This is when they were doing the two-parter Thor stories.
Good, two-parter. We get the B stories of both of those Thors to end off the episode. The first of 110 being titled The Defeat of Odin, so interesting title. Then we have 111, which is The Secrets of Sigurd.
Okay, since we're not heading into the second Tales to Astonish, next week's not going to be that bad.
Okay.
I was unfairly harsh on it. I like the Thor stuff. it was really just, I thought we were getting Boat the Terrible Giant Man, because I always forget that we have the Sergeant Fury stuff.
Yeah.
I thought we were getting Boat of the Bad Giant Man, because the next Giant Man that we're kicking off isn't good either.
Oh, nice.
We're entering the phase where no one at all gives a shit about Giant Man, and they're just churning out whatever to fill pages. And that'll last until about 3-4 months before cancellation, and then they're going to panic and start making drastic changes to the character to try to retain readers, and it's not going to work, and then all of a sudden he's going to disappear and be replaced by a better book.
Fun times. Can't wait to read the rest of Giant Man. Before we go, don't worry.
It happens in Strange Tales, too.
Nice.
Except without the drastic changes to the character, because they can't fuck with Fantastic Four.
Yeah. Before we go, it is the end of the month episode, so we have those bonus segments for you guys. The first is the pull list, which I didn't think of if there's any changes, but I don't think there is still. I think...
Technically, no, because I'm going to claim... Tales to Astonish when we get to the Hulk side.
Yeah, exactly.
I would be pulling these issues now because the Hulk's in there and the Hulk's actually pretty good, but we haven't covered the stories that would make me pull it yet.
Fair enough. That's a good call, actually. I just had to think for a second if there's any changes I would make. I don't think there is. Let me look at my list real fast here. I think I would probably keep everything that I already had. Tales of Suspense, yeah, I'd keep that. Amazing for sure. Sergeant Fury, yes, because 11 doesn't count on this, and I don't know about 12 yet. Probably still keep it anyway. X-Men,
Fury's sitting on the edge for me because I'm getting bored of it, but Fury I wouldn't have dropped it yet.
If we were talking about 11 including this, it'd probably be sitting on the edge for me right now. I was really not impressed with that issue.
We are not, however. That's for next week's comics.
Yes.
X-Men. So this is Fury up to 10.
Yes, which I would definitely still be pulling. I'd probably even still be pulling for 11, to be honest. X-Men, yeah. Strange Tales, yes, because of Doctor Strange. Journey into Mystery, yes.
That's another one that's on the edge a little bit. Because it had that bad run, and then there were a couple of good ones again, which saved it and kept it on the list, but...
The 108 would have knocked it off if they didn't come right back with 109.
108 would have been fine for me because it takes more than one bad issue for me to drop a title.
That's what I mean. Like, if it was bad after 108 for a little bit, I would have probably dropped it. Daredevil, yes, I'm keeping it. Fantastic Four.
Fantastic Four, I've been generally enjoying lately.
I was considering dropping that. For the twist of the dad.
Actually, I don't even have Fantastic Four. What am I talking about? I was looking at your list.
No, you do.
Oh, no, I do. There it is. It's above X-Men.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll say yes to Fantastic Four, but it's on the edge for me. But yeah, so there's that taken care of. Now we go on to our best or worst comics of the month.
Recap time.
Yes. Let Bill recap this bad boy.
We kick things off with X-Men number 7. The Return of the Blob, and the Brotherhood, because we use villains a lot right now. And then we go into Journey into Mystery number 109, A story when Thor fights Magneto for a change, and the B story where Thor gets banished from Asgard. And then Strange Tales 124, A story with Pastepot Pete, and the B story with Cleopatra, because... Stan.
That's the best explanation.
Fantastic 430 with the dreaded Diablo. And then 125, Johnny versus Submariner again. Strange Tales 126 with the deadly duo. Then Amazing Spider-Man number 17 with the Green Goblin. 18 where he quits. Then we go to Tales to Astonish number 60, A story with the Beasts of Berlin, where Hank goes to Berlin alone and fights commie monkeys.
You didn't have to remind us.
Yes, Yes, I did. I had to be aware that was a thing that exists and just see it now in the recap and be like, maybe it wasn't as cut as dry and dried about which one was the worst story of the month.
Yeah, that's a good point.
No, the one I picked is still worse.
Yeah, I will give it.
And then Tales of Suspense, number 59, the A story with Iron Man fighting the Black Knight. And the B story, where Captain America is brought into the modern age in a solo comic, and he fights a bunch of random dudes. Strange Tales, 127, A story, with the mystery villain that's actually just Reed. Amazing
wow,
Spider-Man.
Wow, can't believe you spoiled it like that.
We've already talked about it.
I know.
Amazing Spider-Man, number 19. Which is just a filler with Sandman and the Enforcers.
It should be a better issue because it's the return of Spidey being Spidey, but whatever.
I mean, they gave it away at the end of the previous issue that he was coming back.
They really
it wasn't
did.
Really that dramatic. It was a good issue, though.
Yeah.
It just wasn't anything special.
It's hard for Spider-Man to be bad, to be fair.
Yeah. And then we had Strange Tales, 125, B story. With Strange versus Mordo. 126 B story and 127 B story, the two-parter with Dormammu. Amazing Spider-Man number 20 with the Scorpion. And then the stuff we covered today.
Of course, better known as Scorpy.
All right, Stan.
So, Bill and I briefly talked about this. We don't know each other's best, but we know each other's worst, and it's the same worst, so we're just going to talk about it together. Our worst pick for the month is that good old Strange Tales, issue number 127, B story, which is the mystery fill-in. That wasn't really a mystery, considering both of us figured it out right away.
I hate everything about this comic.
It was pretty bad, though.
As annoyed as I was at the Teen Brigade earlier, I hate this more.
I think, honestly, I think recency bias actually helps me pick this for the worst one because, honestly, that Tales of Us Too Astonished really pissed me off and I actually barely read that one. So that one almost is worse to me, but I just,
if it helps you feel good about your decision... I have actively hated this story for over 5 years now.
I think the reason
I've hated it from the first time I've read it.
Part of the reason I hate it is because it's so blatant to me what's going on. It's so shit. It definitely deserves the spot. And Dan would have picked it too. It would have been a clean sweep.
He gave it away last week that he also hates this story.
Yeah, it would have been a clean sweep if Dan was here, too, because Dan
I'm a firm believer that this is the worst Johnny Storm story in Strange Tales. And that includes the Bouncing Ball of Doom and the one with the Beatles that we haven't covered yet. And the one where they go back to Camelot.
It was very bad, and so bad it definitely deserves the worst of the month. Lot, so I don't regret my pick at all. Even if the Beast of Berlin is deserving as well, the Strange Tales story needs it this time.
Yeah.
Plus, Astonish is leading in the tally anyway, so we might as well give it a break.
I mean, that Beast of Berlin was bad, but I have actively hated the story for over 5 years.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to our best, and I want you to go first here, because... I said that I knew which one, but I'm kind of in between two, so I kind of want to see where you're landing first.
All right, so the issue of Amazing Spider-Man I chose for the best is number 20, with the Scorpion.
That's a very good choice. That I was leaning that direction, and I decided not. And then I've been leaning between two, and actually, I almost was going to give Avengers 9 a lot of credit because I really did enjoy it and the art was beautiful. But I'm going to give it to an amazing issue. But I'm not going to give it the same issue as Bill because I was really appreciative of us getting a great Green Goblin story in the second appearance of Green Goblin. So I'm going to give it the 17. 20 is awesome. But I was very appreciative of the story they were telling in 17 with, and the usage being better, a little bit of Green Goblin.
That one was close for me, but it couldn't beat Scorpion because of the non-finish.
Yeah.
There's never any closure on Goblin. Like, not even him getting away, really.
No.
They just leave him fighting Johnny, and he's never mentioned again.
I would say
that... And then
that...
later, Johnny's doing stuff and, like, isn't upset that Goblin left. I mean, I can't really hold that against the issue, because that happens in later issues. But Johnny's just, like, doing things and not upset that he didn't catch the Goblin, or not saying that he did catch the Goblin. Just no closure.
Yeah, no, I'd even probably go as far as to say that the one you picked, 20, is actually, like, the full-on better issue. I just had a I think that 17 is just really fun. It was just really fun read, yeah, and also...
I picked stuff I haven't even given the highest rating for best of the month before.
Exactly. And I just, already the usage of Goblin being a bit better. So, like, just little elements. Even, like, Human Torch not being, knocking an anti-pop for showing up, so...
Yeah. I think I actually did rate 17 higher. I think I gave it 5.
I think you did, because you raved about how much you enjoyed the, presentation of Goblin more.
Oh, yeah.
Covered it, I
love that story. It's just, I had the most fun reading Scorpion, probably because of the increased Jameson.
It's not always going to be our highest ranked of the month that gets it, like we said, so.
Because I count stuff other than just raw enjoyment for best when I'm rating them. Otherwise, well, nothing featuring Captain Marvel.
If we're going
probably
on
rating, an iter iteration if we would ever get above 2 stars.
If we were going on rating Spirit of War, the Spider-Mans would have been up for choice. The two Dormammu Strange stories would have been there, and the Avengers 9, so, yeah.
This was a strong month for both awards. Let's
it really
honest.
Was.
We read some utter shit, and then we read some truly great stuff.
We truly did. We really did. It's so Amazing Spider-Man still leading by quite a bit for the best of the
It's just taken a huge leap. And I think we obtained our first month of
no Astonish.
Is it actually our first month for no one picking? No, we hit that last month.
Oh, did we? Okay.
I don't think we read an Astonish last month, but we hit the award.
That's fire. Why?
It's 2 months in a row that we both hated the same story.
Yeah, we're both in agreement for the titles that on both sides, just different issues for Spider-Man.
Yeah, but last month we both hated Journey into Mystery 108 A story.
Yes, we did. Well, excuse me. I guess on that note, and this episode went long enough, I thought it would, so we will get on our way out of here. But if you're watching YouTube, please like, subscribe, comment, even share if you'd like to. We're also available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And if you're listen to this on Spotify, tell us why Fantastic Four number 31 was your favorite and why you love them all, man. Anyway, guys.
I mean, he was better than Kang.
You said it. Anyway, guys.
Because he didn't involve the Teen Brigade.
I'm the one that said the Kane issue was my least favorite of the week. So, but anyways, we'll see you all. Actually, well, we'll see you all when we see ya. I don't know if we're recording next week or not yet. We will see. See you all in the next episode, and peace out.
Have a good one.